I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we're talking music scales and gnarly bales as we drop in on Jonah Hill's mid-90s and put a spotlight on country musical Wild Rose. Plus, we speak to BAFTA Rising Star nominee Jesse Buckley. I'm Jake Cunningham, and sat on the edge of the pod pipe with me this week, ready to grind out this week's new releases, we have Caitlin Quinlan.
Hello.
Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And giving me a look that suggests she'll do a 180 out the studio door, it's Kelly Powell.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah?
Excellent
good.
Intro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's nice to actually have that verb. Yeah. I mean, I assume you're all thinking it whenever I do it, but it's just nice to have that confirmed. Okay. This week, as I said, we're going to be talking to Jesse Buckley, which we're very excited about. But we're going to start with mid-90s. And this is the first film directed by Jonah Hill. Kelly, do you want to tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah. So, as you said, it's Jonah Hill's directorial debut. And the film follows 11-year-old Stevie, played by Sonny Sulchek, who is amazing in this film, as he comes of age in L.A. It's ultimately a film about growing up, wanting to find connection and acceptance. And it's told from this 11-year-old's sort of point of view. And it's great.
And it's also about skateboarding.
And it's, oh yeah, sorry. The crew that he falls in with is a skateboarding crew.
Yeah. So we're in very much the realm of 90s skateboarding or skateboarding boom we're in at the moment with mm-hmm. Skate Kitchen and Minding the Gap and this. It's a good time for those people who wanted to skate, who weren't cool enough and can now vicariously live through the people that were actually. So I think what would be a really interesting place to start with this film, because I always find it fascinating when actors go out and make their own ones, is figuring out who the voice of Jonah Hill is as a filmmaker. Recently, or I say recently, it's 5-6 years ago now, Ryan Gosling made a film called Lost River, and it felt like very much he had a magpied directorial voice. You could see him lifting from Nicholas Winding Refn and David Lynch and people he either admired or had worked with, and it didn't feel like maybe at the end of that film we knew who Ryan Gosling the director was. So I'd be curious to ask you folks, who do we think Jonah Hill the director is?
Oh, that's a big question. I think it's difficult to say, obviously, because it's his first one. But I do think that I would say that he definitely wants to be a filmmaker. You can. That's what he wants to do. You know, he said it multiple times in many interviews that his writing and directing is what he wanted to do from the start, and he kind of fell into acting. If we should all be so lucky. And I feel like you can tell that he's a cinephile and that he is, you know, a great lover and student of film. But I do think that this film has a very personal voice attached to it. I don't think that he's doing things just to be cool or to fit in with the hipster crowd. I think that he had a very solid vision and something to say. And I think that he did it really well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, what about you two?
I'm less convinced, only because I think there are elements of mid-90s, especially the very comedic parts that I do think ring true to this Jonah Hill voice that we've maybe come to know from Superbad and his more comedic stuff. And a lot of the tone of the comedy is Jonah Hill-esque. But in terms of as a director, I don't know if I can see just yet what his directorial voice is. I think in a couple of films' time, maybe, he'll kind of flourish and blossom into a more sort of independent filmmaker. And I say independent in terms of, you know, not just doing maybe what Ryan Gosling did and lifting from other filmmakers that he admires. I think it's hard when you're doing a coming of age story because it's kind of like the oldest story in the book. And there's very little, I think, that can really be changed with that kind of mold. I think some people have done it really well, but for me, it's not particularly revolutionary the way he's made this film. I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's a really enjoyable film, and I did take a lot from it. I was moved by it, but in terms of it being a kind of real, you know, there's an authority in his voice and an authenticity to what he's doing, I'm not as convinced yet.
And I think that's absolutely fine, because this is a relatively small story, and I don't think he is coming in with this big, like, auteur identity.
No, of course,
he's
yeah.
giving this a small personal story, is directed with a relatively small personal touch.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I agree that you can't really see, like, hints of how Jonah Hill has evolved from actor to artist behind the camera now. But I think that comes from the fact that this is a really visceral, rocky story which gives a voice to these kids who, like, they're nobodies. They're all nobodies, but they all want to be coolest somebodies, and they'll jump and they'll fall and they'll, like, roll over until they're bruised and whatever. And, yeah, I find that really exciting. And I think also the fact that he always made sure to be extremely authentic and, like, fact-checked that people do skateboard in this way and talk in this way. I think that really, really matters. And just thinking about other actors or performers who have turned behind the camera, I think another artist who's done this in a similar way, which I found to be very effective, was Bo Burnham, directing his debut, Eighth Grade, coming out in a couple of weeks. And I think, I mean, very different films, but you know, they're both coming-of-age stories, and I think a quality that they both share is these now filmmakers are tapping into what they know, like the stories and the places and the, like, the hobbies that shaped them. You know, for Bo Burnham, it was the internet, and for Jonah Hill, it was a skate park.
Yeah. Let's talk about that hobby that is central to the film and the people that perform in it, because there's a fantastic supporting cast of skateboarders and non-skateboarders. Who are your particular highlights in this one, and what were their roles?
Nakel Smith.
Yeah.
Wow, what a performance. Mm. He plays Ray, one of the older teens in the crew. Wow, I just found his performance really moving and sincere. And he definitely felt like a real person. They all did, you know. They really all did. They had
none of them were actors.
They were all non-actors. I think Sonny Soltrek had been in one before.
He's got a handful of roles.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the way that they were all cast, Jonah Hill insisted on going out and finding people who could skate first.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so he went. So he was shown Sonny Soltrek's Instagram account by one of the producers on the film, and then they went to see him at his local skate park and saw him skate. And then they went up to him. And they were like, "Oh man, you're really cool." And Sonny was like, "Oh my god!" And then Jonah Hill was like, "Can you act?" And Sonny Soltrek was like, "Oh, I've been acting for 6-7 years." And then he was like, "Oh, I was in Killing of a Sacred Deer." And Yorgos Lanthimos is, like, really good friends with Jonah Hill, so he's the one who apparently was then like, this kid rules.
Yeah.
And he does.
Yeah, he does. He does.
I think that, like, voice of authenticity that we were just talking about, like, for me, the reason that the film feels authentic is the cast. And it's, and, you know, not to bash Jonah Hill, but I like this film. I don't think Jonah Hill's, you know, done a terrible job. I just think for me the real authenticity was because of the cast. And in another sort of situation, I wouldn't have felt as moved or affected by the storyline. But yeah, Sonny Soltrek is incredible. I want to protect that child at all costs.
Well, but to give him credit, like, that, like, I'm sure he set out to want to build a cast around, like, real people. I'm sure he's got enough muscle with in Hollywood if he wanted to cast
he
the hottest teens to make a skate gang. I'm sure he could.
Yeah. And also to bring that kind of performance out of non-actors, I think, does take a lot of directorial True. Guidance, yeah. which I think
and
goes
as an actor himself exactly that kind knows of experience.
For yeah, them to connect exactly. with each other, because for that crew to be convincing, I think if it was just Sonny Soldier who was good, and I think that's what could have been expected with his experience beforehand. You could think, oh, he'll lead this, and then the other kids will skate. But like you're right, like Nicole Smith and the others as well. I think they all gel so well in a way that I don't know. Like I want to. Skateboard
yeah.
with them.
Yeah. And just to on the point of the cast, I think that so other supporting actors who weren't, you know, non-actors, Lucas Hedges plays Dee-Vee's brother. I think that he was incredible in this film. Honestly, dude, like he is such a talent. I believed him completely, and you felt every bit of rage and repression.
Yeah, I kind of feel character. Like Lucas Hedges has a tendency to be a bit doughy.
Jake!
Like, what? Like,
not in this film.
Exactly.
In this film,
that's
this
what
is,
I mean.
I understand.
Like, this is like, yeah, this is where I kind of felt like I was more on board with the Lucas Hedges train.
I would agree.
Than I had been before. One might say I'm a hedge lord.
Oh, God. But I mean, the fact that you're on board now
is all that matters.
Is all that matters. I will say it is interesting how I think. Lucas Hedges' role as Ian in this film does tap into qualities that he's shown in other films, like in Boy Erased,
in Manchester by the Sea.
He always
I do really like him in that film.
There you go. He always plays like these really painfully angry boys, but I think usually it manifests more in a way where he seems to be anxious and sad and like in pain, whereas here I think it's more rage and violence, which is so much more aggressive, and that's really exciting for him.
Yeah, I mean,
and sad.
Their brotherly relationship is really interesting. Yeah. I could totally feel a lot of it. Like I think the opening
they get
smacked onto the carpet and then dragged around on the carpet.
Oh, gosh.
And if my brother's listening, yeah, I've still got the carpet burns. I had a lot of that, and so I could feel it.
I do think that's where this film really thrives, is that, you know, this kind of portrayal of very angry boys that don't really know how to express themselves. And that's where skating comes into it, and it's a form of expression for them. And there's something quite sort of like lyrical about that, and like the way they weave sort of through the roads and across, you know, through these skate parks, and that's their form of expression, and it's great. But there is something so sad in this film, and it's really, really affecting. And a lot of it is very understated, and it's never really explained. It's not sort of, you know, there's not some big reveal at the end that suddenly makes their life make sense in some way, which is what I think Jonah Hill does really well in this film, is sort of layering those subtleties of their emotion and sort of packing them on top.
They're very complex characters, aren't they? And you do feel that. They're so well established as characters, and you really feel that they are just trying to navigate the world and find their own place in it, you know?
I see what you mean about the sadness, but I remember when watching it, when it finished, I felt so overjoyed and just overwhelmed by this portrait, which, I mean, I didn't grow up skating in the 90s, but it just felt so immersive. And what I like is that I think it's different to other stories about sad teenage boys, because in this film it felt like the main like force driving the film was something that they enjoyed. And although like Stevie will like literally torture himself physically by, you know, drinking, smoking, falling on the ground all the time, I felt like in Sonny Soldier's performance you can see that he's doing that because he gets such an incredible thrill out of like those brief moments where he gets recognition from the other guys. And like when he masters a trick, like that joy just, it completely blew everything else away for me.
Yeah. But it's nice that the film isn't just, oh, 90s kids will remember this. It's not like, let's grab a beer and play Tony Hawk's. I think this film is unafraid of taking its hits thematically as well. And it's Jonah Hill not just going, I had a great childhood and this was the best part of it. It's him trying to navigate a roadmap into nostalgia for a period of his life that perhaps didn't have all the pros that maybe he initially might think back on it having.
Well, he said that he primarily said it in the 90s so that the characters would not have cell phones. He said that was the one of the main reasons he said it in the 90s. And he wasn't looking for that nostalgic sort of feel of the 90s. It was literally just like, you know, when we didn't have cell phones, what were we doing? You know, how did we combat boredom?
Well, yeah, I think he said that this is in terms of those skate videos that everyone was making in that period. This film is made of the conversations that happened between the tricks.
Yeah.
And if you want to see those conversations, Mid-90s is out this week and well worth checking out. Now it is time to move from skating boards to treading them as we talk to Jesse Buckley about Wild Rose. This is the story of a young Glaswegian mother who dreams of lighting up the country music bars of Nashville. Ella, you were lucky enough to talk to her about this one.
I was indeed. Yes, it was great to talk to Jesse Buckley. She plays a rising star in this film, like a Glaswegian singer with itchy feet who just dreams of Nashville. We spoke about country music, how that completely infiltrated her own Spotify playlist. She gave us some recommendations. Talked about her roles, like what attracted her to this one, but also previously to Beast, which she was in last year, which is such a different film. But yeah, she was a delight to talk to.
Okay, here we are. Here's Ella and Jesse Buckley.
Hello, Jesse Buckley. Thank you for joining us on the Curtain Film Podcast. We are here today to talk about your new film, Wild Rose, which follows a young woman, Rose Lynn, in Glasgow, who dreams of being a country star in Nashville. So first of all, congratulations. I really love the film. And I wanted to ask about your own relationship with country music before the film and maybe how that's evolved as you've played the part now.
Well, I think like my initial relationship with country music was kind of slightly naff Daniel O'Donnell impersonations in my hometown in Kerry. So that was my initial experience of it. And then when I found it again with like getting ready for the film and working with amazing musicians like Neil McCall and Jack Arnold, who was the music supervisor, and Nicole's like incredible like backlog and wealth of country music, I just felt completely and utterly in love with it, and I'm a fully converted country music fan now. It's all that's really on my Spotify.
Any artists in particular?
Well, Emmylou was kind of my Emmylou Harris is kind of my first introduction to it, and I think To Daddy was the first song that I learned. So I love her. I was just listening to Wrecking Ball the other day, which is like an amazing album. And then Bonnie Raitt, who's more like blues and country, came into my peripheral vision when we were preparing, and she's just been like I just love her. I love her voice. I went to see her live after we shot filming in Nashville, and I kind of just cried the whole the whole gig. I was like sitting beside all her friends, and I was on my own, and they were like, "Who is this lonely girl wailing at Bonnie Raitt?" And then I got to meet her afterwards, and I don't think I even spoke to her. I was just like, "Oh my God, you are alive and amazing."
So past immersing yourself in that culture in Nashville and everything, as an Irish actress, how was it for you becoming a Glaswegian young woman?
Terrifying. I was like, they're either never going to let me back in here or they're going to open their arms to me. But I mean, I love Glasgow and I felt completely in love with the city, and the people are just like gallus, as like Sophie said in the script, and just full of like this raw, unwielding, open-hearted energy. And getting into the accent was like such a massive part for me, and I worked on it a lot, and it was really kind of crucial to actually the kind of rhythm and tenacity from which Rose Lynn comes from. So I basically like kind of based myself there for kind of a month before I started shooting, and went around different shops asking for stuff in a Glaswegian accent and drinking a lot of whiskey and wearing white cowboy boots. It was very deep preparation.
So Rose Lynn as a character, she comes across as she's just so enjoyable to watch, but there is also that depth, as you say. And I'm really interested in the way that the story's written, because it's a sort of Cinderella story, but there's no real kind of very easy happy ending. And she tends to follow dreams that are usually allowed for men in films about music, and no one really questions whether the characters should follow their dreams, and they're not usually judged as much for that. How do you think Rosalind's kind of different in that sense?
Well, I think the thing that, like, I mean, she's got a really strong sense that this was her destiny. And when I first read the script, it was like a Prison Break film for me about all these women who were breaking outside the confines of the four walls in which they were told they were allowed to dream in. So whether Susanna was told allowed to, like, she was only allowed to exist within a domestic household, or Rosalind was told that she, her path in life was to become a Greggs worker, and that was it. And to have such a strong sense of self and a want for herself, you know, and to want something in your life is really scary, and it takes a lot of balls, and it makes, you've got to risk a bit of yourself in there. And that sometimes comes with a consequence, as we see with Rosalind, and she's kind of like blindly kind of running towards the fire, which has a consequence to her family and to herself. And often these, you know, they can appear selfish, but they're not done without it being a struggle for her. You know, the risk doesn't come easy to her. Yeah, so I think it's just whether you're a man or a woman, and I think this film, people relate it and they relate to that struggle, because it is scary to want something for yourself, and lots of people don't take that dream by the hand and walk it into hell, you know, and she does, and it's really inspiring and unnerving and provoking, and I've certainly learned a lot from her.
And she's really different to Moll, who you played in Beast. Now, these are two incredibly striking roles already, but in really, really different ways. I wonder, first of all, if there could possibly be any common thread between the two, and if not, what kind of things you'd be quite interested in looking at next?
I don't really feel like there was anything common in their stories. They're both coming to the world in a different way. I suppose, and I don't know if that's like within me or within these characters that I am drawn to, but there is a rebellion, and there's a growth, you know, and I don't really have anything set in stone about what I'm looking for. It's more what affects me in the moment when I read a script, or if I feel like it's just new territory, or it's a question that's asking me that I haven't really thought about in my own life, or I don't like to feel like it's water that I've treaded before. And if it is, I want to uncover something new, and I want to uncover something new in myself in it. And I want to meet a character in a story every time and feel like they go away with a bit of me and I go away with a bit of them. And I always feel changed after a job, and people often ask, oh, how do you let go of a character like Moll, or, you know, is it tiring? And I don't want to let go. Like, I feel like I've learned to look at the world in a different way through all these amazing, unique women's eyes, and how lucky I am to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, she's certainly inspired me, and I look forward to seeing how much everyone else decides to become a country singer next.
I'll see you there.
So, Jessie Buckley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's start with her, shall we? Because this is very much Jessie Buckley's film.
Absolutely. She is... I mean, I love it when you can talk about an actor who is... fairly early on in her screen career and just say already, she is an absolute star. Like, she lights up every shot that she's in. And, like, you know, it is a story about someone who has a dream and wants to follow it, and that can be inspiring or empowering or whatever other buzzword you want to use. But I think that story only lifts you up as an audience member who's got nothing to do with the story if your leading person is convincing. And she just... I don't know. She's got this kind of charisma about her. I can't find words. I'm just using lots of big hand gestures about her.
It's great for audio. Really is. Yeah. Caitlin, you have not seen Beast. So, I mean, this is like your early introduction to Buckley.
Yeah, I haven't seen Beast. But, I mean, Jessie Buckley in this film is just... she's so dynamic. She's I think she gives a really raw performance as well in lots of ways. And I think it's a film that could border into the more cheesy territory for people that aren't as kind of, you know, keen on that angle of cinema. But her charm and her skill just kind of, you just breeze through this film with such sort of joy in your heart, you know, to watch her live these dreams. And she's absolutely wonderful in this.
And you mentioned it's a raw performance, which I think is key to it, and maybe will make people think differently about seeing this film if it's being advertised, as even I said, as a musical. It's not really a musical. It just contains a lot of music. But that's not to say it's not filled with quite bleak moments, quiet moments, moments of introspection, and that's all within that performance, because it has to tread that line between occasionally being Ken Loach but then occasionally having to be La La Land.
Absolutely.
And how do you find that both her performance and the film kind of weaves between those paths?
I think it's interesting to have that balance, because so you've got her following her dream of being a singer, and you know, we've seen that story lots of times before, but it's interesting first of all to set it in Glasgow. Like, I haven't seen as many Cinderella stories in Glasgow. And then also, she has just come out of prison, and she is a mother of two young children, and she's very close with her mother, but to the extent that she like uses her to take care of her kids. And she's this quite selfish character who's got a lot of responsibilities as well as the self-doubt. And I think usually when you see these young women usually fulfilling their dreams and going after them, you admire their ambition, but there's not usually anything else tethered to them.
Oh yeah, I mean, let's think of Ali in The Star Is Born. What did she have to do is leave her waitressing job?
Yeah.
Like that, and that's the big step.
But then often, when you see stories about like men who want to follow their dreams or something, I mean, like Jessie said, she says that often they won't then be called afterwards like, oh, he was a pretty bad dad, or like, oh, he shouldn't have left her. It's like they just do what they need to do, and she does in this film. And I think that was quite a new and really really stimulating thing to see.
Yeah, and I think Julie Walters as well plays her mum. That both of them kind of, they work so well, and I think it's a great performance from Julie Walters as well. But they work really well together, because they both have this space in the film to be quite messy characters, quite abrasive characters at times. They're not these kind of perfect people. You know, perfect people don't exist, and this film really kind of allows them to you know, have their story be told in a way that's not glossing over the hard parts and you know, not making them out to be these really wonderful individuals that, you know, there's been trouble in their lives and they've done bad things and they've been selfish. And this film really kind of not champions that, but just allows them the space to breathe and, you know, to to do both.
Yeah, I think Julie Waters has maybe in the last few years been kind of slotted into this just playing nice mums, nice grandma type role, but she gets a bit more meat here. I think it's always quite maybe tough to process here that she's Jessie Buckley's character's mother, and you actually feel like some anger, some resentment there to what Rose left behind when she went to prison and what she kind of left to Julie Waters' character. And it makes their relationship really interesting. Occasionally, I do think the film struggles with having to shift from moments like reflecting on that relationship to moments where Rose is singing along to her iPod and then imagines a band around her, and you get these magic realism moments that are wonderful. Like some of the music video sections of Sing Street, for instance, where suddenly you've got this Top of the Pops aesthetic pops out of nowhere. I really love those moments, but occasionally it's trying to...
This is what I mean by the more cheesy angle, I suppose, that some people... it's not necessarily going to sit with some people. But I think this comes back to Jessie Buckley being so charming. And her voice as well is incredible. I think her actual performance skills really make it hard to not be totally absorbed in her singing. And there are some moments where she's, on stage, wherever it is, if it's the Glasgow Opry or, a bar in Nashville, her performance skills are just so, so rich.
But that to compliment her again, it's performance within performance. You can totally tell her identity.
And her musical ability is astonishing in this film.
And we can shift and see her take on this country music star persona that she's got together so well. That moment when she sneaks in and does the song, it's really great. And I know that people at various events have been treated to live performances with her as Rose, which I imagine
if
must
there
be
are
fantastic.
Any of those coming up again, to anyone listening, can I come, please?
Send us along.
You mentioned these little cheesy moments. There's a lot of the kind of OC style, this is my listening to music face.
Would like to add that I love the OC.
So one for OC fans.
One for OC fans.
But just slowly zooming into someone's face because they're so into the music.
Bloody loves country music, don't you, Jake?
I really do. Jake. It really is. If anyone wants a country music recommendation, I have a Spotify playlist called All Timers, and I've copied into there a long time ago. If you don't like a stronger name, album and artist name for country music, a guy called Doug Paisley with his album Strong Feelings.
Oh my God!
If my brother's listening to this, he will love that recommendation.
Yeah, do recommend anyone who's enjoyed Wild Rose. Have a listen to Strong Feelings by Doug Paisley. It will, suffice to say, live up to its title. So we've maybe talked about the film being a bit fluffy at times, or maybe a bit grey at times. But there are these little intricate moments of directorial flourish that kind of sit in the background, and where you can see that really how much the film has been thought about and has been a passion project for Tom Harper, the director, and Nicole Taylor, the writer of the film. Like little bits where they've thought about the art direction, like that Rosalind's flat, just the tiling mixed with the tiling in the kitchen and the colour of the curtains put together become a red, white and blue American flag. And this is the same as her plates as well. And it's not screaming at you. It's not going symbolism or anything like that.
There are no coincidences in this world.
Exactly. But it's just this idea of... her world seeping into the outside world.
It's like a character that's always meant to have this path, and kind of there's a destiny almost there to be a little over the top, but there is, and that's part of the joy of it. I think
for me, whilst I love the bits of the performance, I love her, the story I think is very familiar. The core beats of it aren't going to really surprise anyone, but I think maybe for a lot of people that's going to be a nice thing as well, that this is in some ways a challenging watch, but really it's relatively easy to go along with.
Yeah, the film, it is a bit predictable in that there is the same idea of this person following their dreams, but then naturally this young lady has got a husband who's threatening in the background. You didn't need that. This film just had so many things within it, like both from a writing perspective and directing, and we've said it enough times, Jesse Buckley, like, keep the husband, you know, you don't need him in this film. I think it would fly much higher without him.
Yeah, the film doesn't really need its men.
Absolutely
like,
not.
It's writing fine without them. And it's also got the best use of the word gumption since The Holiday. And it's been, I think, 14 years since that film. So it's good to have it back. Who do we think, like, what are fans of other films going to find in this one?
I think this is one that harks back to a sort of earlier age of British cinema where you're looking at films like The Full Monty and Billy Elliot and even something like Kinky Boots. Like, to me, that's where this film slots in. And there's something so wonderful about just the utter charm and joy of those films. And yeah, just a very feel-good kind of film with the hints of the kitchen sink drama, you know, thrown in a bit as well. So yeah, something along those lines from a bit of an earlier time in British cinema.
All right. So we put a call out on Twitter this week, going back to our mid-90s chat, to briefly talk about some of our Twitter followers' favourite films that take them back to the 90s, and as well as a few of our own. So Jem Dollar said Clueless, which I think is
fantastic
show. And our very own Sam Howlett mentioned The Witches, which is getting its own remake from Robert Welcome to Marwen Zemeckis.
Oh my goodness me.
And I'm always happy to hear that Robert Zemeckis is making a film. It's going to be a nightmare and I can't wait. Film fan Stevie said The Big Lebowski, just right at the end of the 90s there, but definitely.
Still counts.
Yeah, it does. Well, I'll take one from the earlier period in the decade. For me, as soon as I knew this was something we'd be talking about, I just jumped straight to Wayne's World.
Excellent shout.
Yeah, that just is that decade to me, even though it's a film that relies on characters that are living in it two decades behind it. A perfect film, I'm sure, and not it's not aged at all. All right, so that's mid-90s and Wild Rose. But it's not the only thing that you can see in cinemas this week. If you don't fancy heading out to the cinema, you can always stay in and watch Curzon Home Cinema, of course, where we've got tons of films on demand. New this week is Rafiki, which I haven't had the chance to see yet. Ellie, you have?
I have. Do seek it out. Rafiki is this wonderful, sweet romance set in Kenya. It's a story between two young women who fall in love with each other. And interestingly, at first, this film was banned in Kenya because it was said to be promoting lesbian content, which was not allowed. Since then, the ban's been lifted. It's all of the, you know, people who have seen it have been really, really taken with it. Really excited for that to come out here finally.
Great. And I've selected a couple of films that are maybe ones for the Wild Rose fans out there who are looking to continue that kind of magic realist musical British thread. Sing Street and Frank, which I think we're some fans of in
excellent
here as well.
Excellent choices.
Yeah, I bloody love Sing Street. Oh, it's
I'm
so
gonna watch
good.
That film again. Oh, I'm going to watch it this weekend.
What I love about Sing Street is that, like, it's school kids making a band and then they start and then they're great.
They're just great. Nothing goes wrong because they deserve the world.
Yes, they really do. Oh, they're brilliant. Okay, if you've got any thoughts on Wild Rose or mid-90s, then do email us at podcast@curzon.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these ones. And you can tweet us the old-fashioned way if you like. That's at Curzon Cinemas, where we can also look forward to some of your thoughts as well as our call-out for next week's episode. If it's your first time listening to the show, please subscribe. You can do that on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. And when you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful. If you want to keep up with all of us on social media, you can do so. Caitlin, you're on Twitter.
I am. You can follow me at CSA Quinlan.
I am at EFE Kemp.
KS_Powell.
Lovely. And I'm at Jake H. Cunningham. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a pleasure having you. Having you.
Oh no.
Sorry.
Everything was going so well.
People 100% smoke weed in here.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I was like, totally affected this podcast. It's all this secondhand smoke.
It's been a pleasure having you with us. Farewell.
Okay. He's going to keep all of that.
Yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.